since we've got a nice group considering the weather, we're going to call the meeting to order of the MAD Citizens Involvement Committee. This is our first of the 2012 series of meetings. And again, welcome and Happy New Year to everybody. Thanks for coming out on a very inclement night. I'm going to start the meeting with the minutes of the Thursday, December 1st, 2011 meeting, which you should have in your packets under Attachment 2A, CIC. And if you would, just take a moment to review that. And if anybody would care to make a motion, we'll open the floor for motions.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Okay, we have a motion from Mr. Baker to approve the minutes of the December 1st meeting.
I'll second.
Mr. Kish is the second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all is in favor of accepting the minutes of the December 1st, 2011 meeting as submitted. Please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll move into item 3 on the agenda, the technical progress report. Curtis will go ahead and give us additional information on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few things to call attention to. First, AMATS is really starting its 2035 planning process kind of in the next 18 months. The plan has to be completed. Our last one was Transportation Outlook. We completed it in 2009. And so at this point, we're really starting to put together the kind of the documents that feed into the plan. So what you're going to see from Krista tonight is she's going to talk about a draft of a bike plan that we've been working on for a while. We're also restarting our plan update subcommittee, which is a group of planners and engineers that help review these drafts as we put them together. And then we will also be doing goals and objectives forecasting with the end goal to have an approved 2035 regional transportation plan in May of 2013. So it's kind of like the next 18 months or so are a pretty busy time for our staff as we try to put those documents together. Also from a staff perspective, which I don't want to steal Krista's thunder, but we are about to print our bike users map. We are going to be printing it on water-resistant, tear-resistant paper, so if people do want to carry it or take it with them or keep it in a backpack, we're hoping that they'll and use it as a canvas, you know, tent. you know, they're more than welcome to do that. We're hoping to bid it out next week. And what our plan is to kind of release it with sort of the spring season in March 1st. We're also going to have our website switching gears March 1st. Should be ready to go live, and we'll keep the CIC posted on that. In our March meeting, we'll probably have a lot to talk about there, and we'll definitely distribute those. And Krista will get into more detail with that. The other thing that's kind of come on the radar in the last couple of days, and Mike and I were talking about it earlier, is the ODOT announcement of their track project funding over the next... They basically did some revenue forecasting to 2035 and found, based on their revenues, they did some reorganization of the types of funds that they... or type of projects that they could fund over the next 30 years or 20 years. What that resulted in was, in Akron, the Central Interchange project, which had been three phases, which was the Central Interchange, and then the West Leg, and then the Kenmore Leg, through, and then through Norton. The Kenmore through Norton Leg was dropped completely, or it fell to Tier 3 in track, which means that they're not going to be funding any type of phasing for PE or design anytime soon. And then phase one and two, the central interchange, the main Broadway and the central interchange portion, did receive money for preliminary engineering. So that stayed in what they call tier two. So it's still in the pipeline. And then in tier one, the big news was that what they did was they basically said, over until 2036, we're going to project that we have $100 million a year. And then they took all the projects that they had promised for construction and tried to make them fit into that budget. And so what they ended up coming out to was, you know, we'll be able to fund all the projects that we've committed to by 2036. And the big controversy was that, or is, that the Cleveland Interbelt Bridge, the second bridge that will be built, was pushed out to 2023. And part of the reason was, you know, as they were adding up the revenues, they didn't have $320 million. They actually had to, you know, wait. I think they don't spend any money from year 2020 to 2023 to save the funds so that they can build the bridge. And this is something that I think we've known about for a while, not the scheduling of projects, but we've been hearing a lot from ODOT over the last couple of years that gas tax revenue at the federal and state level is flat, if not in some cases we've had mileage declining, which means less tax revenue. And we're seeing an ODOT that's really trying to tighten its belt, which I think makes sense because what we did know is that ODOT had been over-promising a lot of projects. But what we found is that also is that there's some skepticism that the Northeast Ohio projects tended to be pushed further down the list. And there's some skepticism that this is sort of a leverage play for the leasing of the turnpike to say, you know, we need these funds because you're not going to get your bridge until 2023. So it's an interesting discussion. Nothing's moved on the turnpike, but we're expecting to hear more over the next couple months. And this has sort of kind of drummed it up even more because people are saying, you know, basically I think there's this feeling and talking to a few people up in Cleveland that they're almost going to be held hostage a little bit by the turnpike leasing issue. And so I think there's a general feeling that this was, you know, not exactly just happenstance, but it is an issue that we're going to continue to follow. And hopefully, you know, hopefully if the economy gets better, they'll be able to restore more funding to that program and projects will happen faster.
Huh. Not too swift on these things, but... what does leasing of the turnpike have to do with the Interbelt Bridge?
Where's the rational nexus to that? The leasing of the turnpike, the estimates are that over $3 billion, you know, they could potentially get $3 billion up front for the leasing of the turnpike.
Okay.
So the idea is what some people are speculating is ODOT saying we only have $100 million a year for these large-scale projects. So if they say, well, we're going to get flush with $3 billion, those projects that we say won't happen until 2036 will happen a lot sooner. So that's where people kind of perceive there being a leverage play. And that would be the connection.
In addition to Mr. Lassen's comments, I guess I'm the same way. I don't know that much about the process as far as engineering and fundraising and things, but for projects to get this far, all the groundwork, all the environmental work, all the engineering, the design work, other commitments ancillary to these projects, removing housing, removing businesses, things like that, acquisition of property under eminent domain, and then to have this news come out that, oh, gee, we don't have the money. And how does that relate to this drawback proposal where they say we have all these projects and all this money is out there? It really gives rise to what is going on. It seems like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing.
Mike's comments. You know, especially with the new development occurring in central Cleveland, it'd be kind of a shot in the foot that traffic would suddenly become a problem when you've got all of these new, medical mart, the casinos, new hotels. It used to be 20 years ago, the argument was, you know, they have hotels downtown.
Yeah.
Now the argument will be, can't get to them.
Yeah, and Mike, too, to go off of yours, the other thing that I didn't talk about or touch on was that, you know, last time we were here, we did talk about ODOT having this carryover proposal where they were saying that if MPOs continue to carry over money into the next fiscal year, that ODOT would start to take a percentage of that. So if you carry over $1 million, ODOT might want $250,000 of that million, and you know, in 4 years they're going to want $750,000 of that million. And those two things, I guess, also are tied together from the standpoint that, you know, ODOT's sort of making a play on all fronts that we're broke, and so they say that to the MPOs, saying that you're not spending, collectively MPOs aren't spending your over $100 million a year is being carried forward. And so again, that points to, if we had that $100 million, we could, you know, help construct one of those large projects that now we've pushed out to 2036. So ODOT's kind of making the, you know, the appeal in circles, saying like, look, this, we have to do this. They're almost like austerity measures. And you know, from AMAT's perspective, I mean, we were definitely disappointed with the decision, but we did know that the, you know, the number of promises that ODOT has made over the last 10 years, if they aren't fundable in the next 3 years, for you know, for sure. So,
well, it's, you know, as usually happens in situations like this, it's the good old taxpayer that suffers. You know, certainly the Akron area for that Kenmore Lake project certainly could use a shot in the arm. You know, it's not in the center of the city exactly, but it certainly is a high high use artery, and I think that a lot of truck traffic that we see on the Kenmore Leg 76 and 77 are simply trucks dodging the turnpike tolls. So this is you could make a point that this is a truck versus automobile safety issue, perhaps. So any enhancements to these arterial routes actually could help prevent loss of life, injuries, damage, you name it.
Yeah.
So it's really frustrating. It's a domino effect, and again, the taxpayer seems to take the brunt of it.
Well, and I will add, I mean, if we're gonna try to look at it with rose-colored glasses, the one positive thing is that the Akron area did get $1 million for the main Broadway interchange, which is where I think everyone knows that real dangerous weave, you know, getting off and getting on, and so they've got preliminary engineering money, and then next year they're going to get over $4 million to do the detailed design for the improvement, which means that it'll be to that point after that where it will be ready for construction once construction dollars become available. But obviously that's a pressing need that is a high crash area now, and I think, you know, to Mike's point, you know, we can't wait forever to fix some of these issues. So.
Okay, does anybody else have anything on that topic? If not, we'll move to agenda item number 4. And Kristen will present additional information on the draft bike plan, which is attachment 5B to your packets. And we have an on-screen presentation as well.
Hi, thank you. My name is Krista Beniston. So, as Curtis kind of mentioned, as part of us updating our next long-range transportation plan and as a following up on a recommendation to our Connecting Communities initiative, which tied together land use and transportation, we've begun a bike plan. This is a initial draft, and we're bringing it to you guys at this point to let you know what we've done so far, get your opinion, check if we're on the right track, and, you know, what other things should we be looking at. Okay. So the purpose of the bike plan is to enhance and increase bicycling in the region, as, you know, both recreationally and as a viable transportation choice, essentially by providing safe, efficient, effective bike routes and facilities. The recommendations that go into the bike plan will then be eligible for funding in the long-range plan. So at this point, we don't have to, we can put everything we want in, and when we do long-range plans, then we have to actually only put in what we can fund in the life of that plan. Okay. So as part of this, we've started a bunch of different analyses, including, you know, talking to local communities, talking to the park districts. We've had various public meetings and some of the following maps that I'll go through in a moment. So we've had 3 public meetings, and I think some of you were in attendance. You know, the main point was to try to get more involved in the local bike community, let people know, you know, what AMATS is, what we're doing, what we're trying to do, get input on our initiatives. The staff's also been participating in events all around the community. We helped do Bike Week in May. We participated in River Day in Monroe Falls. and also an adventure race in Portage County. So I think we're trying to make, you know, on all fronts, an effort to get more involved in the community, get our name out there, try to get input on the things that we're doing. One of the first analyses that we did was looking at benchmarking ourselves to other cities. So how do we stand up is where we are looking. The data we used was just for the central city, not the region, because that was the easiest to get accurate information. As you can see, Ann Arbor and Madison clearly stand out as far as the number of bike paths and the number of bike lanes. Madison has a combined 130 miles, Ann Arbor has 105, and Akron has 17. So for our area, it doesn't include the towpath trail, the bike and hike, and some of the other regional trails that AMETS has put a lot in and that are a big draw for our area. But I think what this does show is that there are cities out there that are making a commitment to investing in bike infrastructure. And they're also the areas that, you know, you always hear that are have a lot of bikers, are doing well. Well, you can see that the cities are putting money into it and they're making it a priority. So, and you know, I think we hear the argument a lot of weather, you know, being a deterrent in Northeast Ohio. And, you know, I think so for our different boards, you know, I think this is a good way to show that, you know, some of the communities that really are putting in a lot of money, you know, aren't in Florida.
If I can jump in too, I mean, so I started doing this analysis, it really blew me away. I mean, we heard about Madison and Ann Arbor and other, and Minneapolis too, which we didn't do, but so what we were looking for is we were looking for cities that were similar size and population. So we tried to find, you know, cities that were within the 100,000 to 200,000 range to really compare it to, and then the requirement was they had to be in kind of Midwest climates to look at them. And I just, when I started doing the bike lanes, just the bike lane part of it, it really blew me away. I mean, Madison has just dedicated so many resources to biking. They have 87 miles of bike lanes when Akron has two.
Have you ever been to Madison?
I have not, and it's on my list of places to go.
You go to the university, it's like wall-to-wall bike schools.
Yeah.
There's a famous bike shop there by the name of Yellow Jersey, which is a play on words because yellow jersey is what the winner wears in the Tour de France, but their logo is a yellow cow, which is Madison, Wisconsin, cow cheese, the whole bit. So, and that's pretty awesome. And they got for that size town, I think they have like anywhere, I know I didn't count, but four to ten bike shops.
Yeah.
And I went walking around and I looked in the back of one of the bike shops. They had a building that I looked inside. The window. They have over 500 bicycles assembled ready for sale. Mm-hmm. The town is amazing.
Yeah. And you know, what we looked at too is because the other thing you'll hear is like, well, they're college towns predominantly, but it's like, you know, sometimes we have to remind people that like the University of Akron is right downtown and it has 30,000 students. So, you know, so there's like what we really looked at with this is that, you know, it's more about communities making the choice to invest in this type of transportation, and we think that it holds like a lot of promise, and it was really good data for us to kind of show our members just to say, hey, you know, it's not just happening down south or, you know, in the nicer climates. But I'll go back to you, Mr.
No, that was it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Coletta. I just want to make sure you get on the record.
Oh, well. You'll hear my mouth a lot.
We'd like to get it in the minutes. He has input.
After all, I probably have this formal cycle down.
So the bike user map is something that we introduced at, I think, every public meeting to try to ensure the accuracy of. And for this, what we did was we analyzed major roadways looking at the posted speed limits, the road widths, the average daily traffic, you know, to help rate roads as kind of a beginner, intermediate, advanced, expert, with the purpose of, you know, helping cyclists to, you know, if you're a beginner cyclist or with kids, you know, maybe pick a route that would be easier if you're comfortable riding anywhere. I guess you'll probably be comfortable using any of it, but, you know, just to kind of help people that aren't as familiar with all the roads pick a route to encourage on-road cycling. As Curtis mentioned, we, by the end of well, mid-February, we should have 2,500 maps, and worked with, you know, bike shops have been great, and I think our plan is to, you know, between bike shops, the park district kiosks, and our communities, kind of be the primary distribution.
Maps going to be free, or?
Yes, yeah. Free. And I have, and it will look much prettier than this, but I just printed this out and I taped it myself at her office, but this will be the exact size and pretty much the colors.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point, our plan is to continually update this. So, you know, this was our first stab at anything like this. So, you know, we hope that as people look at it, you know, they say, well, I disagree with this road or that road. You should really add this. This would be helpful. You know, next year at this time we can do, or, you know, in 6 months if it goes popular, you know, we can continually update it to reflect the needs of users. Mm-hmm.
If one is going to use, like, a map pocket on a handlebar bag, that thing is going to work.
You know, we considered that as far as size, you know, trying to make, get as much on the map as we could. You know, I think what we concluded was that if someone was going to be able to put that in, say, like a backpack or something like that, you know, they wouldn't maybe keep it in a, like, pocket on them. They would keep it in, like, a bag or something more to that. So that's why we...
Like, I have something that sits on a handlebar bag. Put a map in and fold it the way.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking in terms of the way you have it folded and arranged, maybe a different folding pattern, so it would be more a lot like that. You know, that's just a suggestion.
It's not a bad idea.
No, yeah. The other
like
is
a standard size in the bike industry for like a bike mat. Mm-hmm. You know, fits in that. So
that pocket.
Although I do agree, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be something that people are going to need to watch and follow as they ride as much as plan a route.
Or plan.
Right.
That's sort
after
of...
After you ride, you're going to consult, or probably, well, before.
Yeah.
I'll consult after.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was... I mean, that's a good point, and I think, you know, that's definitely something, I mean, for this printing, that's the size it's going to be, but I think, you know, if we keep hearing those comments, that's something that we can pretty easily change just to get it folded smaller, and I think looking at those measurements, so we...
The other thing you might find interesting is there was an organization I saw at the bike show called Wahoo.
And what's it called?
Wahoo. And they actually developed, I can't think of the term in it, but basically using an iPhone, that thing tracks everything, GPS, heart rate, miles, average speed, all that. It's got all these things you can attach to an iPhone. And one possibility is maybe converting this to an app.
We've definitely discussed that. And I think what we want to see is, are people interested in it? Do people say they like it? In a perfect world, I think we would love to eventually do that and try to take advantage of some of the technology.
The thing I didn't like about the idea with Ubuntu is that not everybody has an iPhone.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But ANT, that's it. ANT dot dot dot, whatever that means. That's kind of a format.
Well, alternative, whatever it is, transportation, that guy?
No, they got it on these devices. It's basically, it's some kind of protocol or format for electronic devices that you can take an iPhone and put this in, and it reads things like you can track your heart rate, track your miles, track your GPS, and then download it to your computer.
So, I mean, I think, you know, especially like with this, like we fully recognize that we are not the experts. So, you know, I think with especially all of, you know, the biking initiative stuff, our, you know, goal is to be kind of a constant process, you know, to make things better. To, like I said, you know, if we get rid of these in 3 months, we can easily do another reprinting and, you know, make changes immediately that, you know, we've heard. So, we're excited about that. And we think it'll be, you know, a good tool. And even if it, you know, is a map that people use just as a map and promotes biking, I think however people use it will...
If people put it on their wall, I'll be happy.
Uh-huh.
Chris, what's your
view? Mr. Lassen.
Go ahead. I do a lot of things with Kyle in the Valley Scenic Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And they have
the stops aren't on there.
They have a very major transfer to baggage car, and $2 for the ride. Just might be appropriate for the one here. So there's this. Thank you.
I kind of heard that comment earlier today too about looking at, you know, making sure that we highlight that, because it is almost like a, it's a tourist thing, but it's also something that's very like just a great service to Northeast Ohio.
Does it mention about the RTA buses being equipped with bike racks on them?
Not in there. I mean, we'll definitely discuss that on in the plan. We were talking to one of Hardin's planning director, I believe. Yeah. I mean, he had suggested for the plan, you know, overlaying part of routes with the bike trailheads,
right.
You know, just to make sure they were serving. I mean, so it translates definitely. But I think that's a good point. We could put the Cuyahoga Valley stops, since they do offer the bike aboard service on there. It would be a good thing.
There'd probably be a lot of extras that you could add to an internet version of the...
Yeah.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Much
that's
easier printing, you know, overlaying.
And, yeah, sadly, you know, that the bike on the buses is really popular, but they don't, PARTA or Metro don't track it. You know, other than anecdotally, the bus driver saying I had, you know, two bikes on my...
Did
know,
they try to track it?
No, they haven't tried. And one of the things we were talking to them about today was it'd be great because you could almost actually know the on and off and where people are, you know, where more common it is for people to get off with bikes and on and all that kind of stuff.
So we've had...
One of the things I'm looking on, I'm dreaming up, is a bike station. And one of the things I found that is interesting, we're interested in the location near the transit center.
Mm-hmm.
Because before the transit center, I was going like this about building a bike station in the transit center, but it never happened.
And
one thing that I would be helpful in writing a proposal or something is having that data. How many bikes were being transported by
bikes. Yeah, and PARTA at the Kent Central Gateway will have a small bike station with lockers and a few. I mean,
PARTA is now?
Yeah, in Kent, where they're doing the PARTA Central Gateway Transfer Center.
They have one in Cleveland now?
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know how big the PARTA one, how extensive, but they're definitely.
And I visited
it should be
one
pretty
in Tempe,
cool.
And they have one in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very interested, have been interested for 15 years or more about putting something like that in happen, tied with what else we did.
Yeah.
Actually, I envision our center that does many things.
Yeah. Do we have any more comments?
Is this the last one? Are you going to say something before?
He can't.
Okay.
All right, any comments from anybody other than Mr. Wittgenstein and Mr. Coletta and Mr. Lassen?
I definitely agree that that needs to be said.
I
definitely agree that that needs to be smaller.
Needs to be smaller?
I have several from several different places around. I have Lake Counties, I have Lorraine's, I have Cleveland's. They're all smaller than that.
Okay. Well, that's Pat Smith. Thank you for your comments.
Do we know when you're going to do your website? That's been on your radar for
yes,
some time.
Yes, it should be live in
We're hoping
March.
Like March 1st, beginning of March.
Everything is built now, and we're putting the text in and starting to do, you know, deciding what trails we're going to highlight, and also then getting the, we decided we were going to wait to have it go out with the bike users map, so that'll be a big part of the site.
If you put on there smaller versions of sections of that,
people could print out. That's
a
good idea.
A lot better than trying to mail multiple copies of this and just scanning them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even keep all the info, too. You just cram it in there, you know.
Okay, that was Fred Wise, thank you.
Well, what is the standard, you know, for you guys, what would be the most helpful size of that? Because one of the things that we really struggle with is two counties on the map.
Standard handlebar to put what?
But what are you going to put on there?
Well, that's
if
like
if
what
you're going out on a ride, you usually have a cue sheet.
That's right.
And a cue sheet would fit it or fold within that. Mm-hmm. But a cue sheet's down the point of left and right, turn here, turn there.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to get that on that kind of a map.
Right.
That detail.
Right.
Well,
if you have that on the website, when we print it out, then you have
so you can almost just print out the section that you might.
Yeah, that's right.
So maybe what we should do is maybe even on the website have like a print your cue sheet or print your...
Print the screen or the view that you're in.
Right.
And that's good. Something that we can... That's
and
a good...
I would say if you could arrange the sections, it would be... Actually, what I ought to do is just bring a bike bag over to you guys and show you the window pocket.
Yeah.
If you could do it through Google, pocket. You can expand it to whatever you want.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing that with the website we've tried to put... I mean, I think that's one of the reasons things are taking a long time is because all the major regional trails are overlaid with Google. So you can pull up the train, you can pull up the road maps. You know, and it'll have all the trailheads. You click on the trailhead and it has the address. You know, like click here for directions. So, you know, I think it'll take, some working out the bugs, but almost everything should be overlaid with Google. So, it, hopefully it will be a pretty mappable interface.
And, but that's a really good comment. I mean, in all honesty, like this bike user's map, it's partially, I think, to be used for riding, but it's also used sort of as a promotion tool and as, to tell people that aren't used to this stuff that they can, and so it's like we kind of, I think maybe what we can do is if say, the people that are really committed are saying, we love this thing, well then let's, we'll design one specifically for the bike, I mean, it's kind of like we tried to, hit the middle. Yeah, so.
I am from New York City, back in the 70s. I bought it then. Mm-hmm. And it was just a long book this way. And it had a little cookbook.
Almost like triptych type.
Yeah, triptych.
But I think your online stuff is going to be important, too, because when I travel out of town and I'm going to a city, I do look online before I get there for bike routes and bike paths and bike whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think online, a lot more people are doing it online.
Right. Mr. Lassley, do you have another comment?
Just one suggestion. I just got new glasses this morning. I spent a lot of my life designing those. The only negative I see in the graphics is the paths, the colors need to be more vivid. Just the bike trail stuff, but they need to pop out above the background. That's my two cents.
And the map definitely focuses on road, and then the trails were, we wanted them to be on there, but not be the focus. But I mean, if they're hard to see, that's we can definitely make those easier.
And hopefully the print will be more vibrant than our plotter.
Yeah, because it should be printed a lot nicer than that.
I don't even think that's actually the accurate color because every print is,
Yeah, once you use a four color process.
Yeah.
The map you've got here shows. Well.
Yeah.
but no, that's a good. I mean, I think that's exactly the kind of comments that we keep to just hope collecting, and we can make it better as we go along.
Now, when you guys say on road, does that mean just a regular bike lane, or a share road, or a separated bike lane?
Any combination.
Okay.
Should we move on? Then we can.
I don't want to beat the dead horse. But the only other thing that's really cool just about this whole process is that the mayors, the policy committee members of that we technically work for, are getting really excited about this stuff. The bike users map, they're getting excited about the biking. And it's something that even, when we were working on our draft bike plan 4 years ago, it was just sort of rubber stamped and pushed through, and I think now we're seeing a lot more interest in it, which I think is really, it's what we've seen in the trend, but it's also exciting for us as staff.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to think what's called like riding with.
Like Michael Coleman does in Columbus, right?
Yep. I was going to say at the meeting.
Right, it's another big bike town. Columbus is awesome.
Yeah.
But Columbus is also flat.
Yeah.
So traditionally AMATS has funded and planned for regional trails. Mainly the towpath has been one of the major trails that we've funded. So this plan is one of the first efforts where we've really, looked at even how do we analyze on-road biking, how do we promote it, how do we make recommendations. So the bike users map is one of the, tools to analyze the roads. Another thing that, we kept talking about was, where are people riding? I think we're going to try to get more involved in doing bike counts and that sort of thing. We did that a few locations this summer. and as the spring and summer move on, do that more. You know, but, you know, kind of what are the destinations? I mean, one thing we just started doing was mapping, you know, possible things that would be amenities to, you know, anyone but bikers in general. So we looked at the apples, which just kind of look like red dots on the screen, are grocery stores. The stars are schools. We have libraries on there. And I don't know if you can see too well, but sort of the ovals that are lighter color are major employment centers, so retail, manufacturing, service. You know, so what we tried to do here is just, you know, see where are the clusters around major corridors that, you know, may be good places to start for looking at on-road investments. Curtis, if you want to. So from all this, you know, we started, you know, we decided we needed two sets of recommendations. We needed an on-road and an off-road. And, you know, decided to proceed from there. And then if you haven't already, it's in your packet, is these next two maps and the table. So the, Andy, to your point, the on-road recommendations are a list of kind of priority bike corridors. So we looked at that activity center map. We looked at the bike users map and tried to start connecting, you know, what are these major roads that would be good places to start either when the roads are redone or when you're going to invest in biking, you know, that these should be kind of priority areas.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Corridors, what do you mean by that? The corridors that you're talking about? Where
roadways.
Just any roadways, or do you have certain areas that you want to link together and call that a corridor?
It's kind of a vague term. I mean, I think what, in theory, like the perfect corridor we would say would be like the 91 corridor or the 303 corridor, you know, that would go from Streetsboro to Richfield. But there are some, obviously, that are, you know, smaller in scope than that. But the idea is, and I think the reason we're kind of using that generality, too, is because we're kind of saying that it doesn't necessarily have to mean you need a bike lane all the way down 91. I mean, that might be something that's completely infeasible, you know, due to right-of-way and all that stuff. But when we revisit these roads, when they're looking to do resurfacing, reconstruction, let's look at how much space do we have in the shoulder, you know, all the things that could make riding easier. So, you know, we're not trying to make it as prescriptive as, like, the 91 corridor will have, you know, 5-foot-wide bike lanes up and down it the whole way. It'll be more like as things develop there, this is the priority corridor. And then the other thing is that, you know, this is the first time that we've really put together a system-wide, almost, it's almost like a bike lane, you know, potential bike lane map. And just what we were finding is that, you know, Hudson has some bike lanes, there are a couple in Akron, you know, and there are a few spattered around, but no one's looking at it like it could ever potentially be a system. And so, you know, one of the things we try to do is, you know, like in Hudson where they do have bike lanes on 303, it's like, okay, well, what would that look like if that was part of something that was a little more systemic? And so I think that's kind of exciting, so that when we see projects that apply to us for, you know, say a state road project, and we look at our map and say, you know, that's on a priority corridor, we need to spend more time with them to see, you know, what can we do to make this more bike friendly? And we've never had that check before. And so, you know, it might sound like a kind of a small thing, but I think actually it could have large ramifications on the projects that are constructed.
And so, kind of to your point, you know, at this point we're not, you know, saying, like, picking any specific sections and prescribing, because when we get projects, you know, they're still haven't been really designed or engineered at all. It's, you know, more the idea, and we give funding, and then the local community is actually, you know, what they figure out what they need, what's, you know, going to be the details. So I think our plan is to, you know, have a, you know, pretty comprehensive list of, you know, what would be good, you know, thick bike lanes, sharrows, wide shoulders, you know, almost like a list of, like, here are really good things that you can use, you know, that have been done successfully that AMATS can potentially fund, and then, you know, sort of try to leave it up to the local community, like, what, you know, we'll push for, you know, some sort of bike amenity, especially on these corridors. But, you know, at this point, I think, yeah, I'm not sure we would do a good job if we tried to be too prescriptive of what, you know, specific, whether it would be like a lane or something.
Right.
But, I mean, maybe I'd like to get your opinion on, you know, that is, you know, is that a good, that's the best we've come up with at this point.
Can I make one suggestion?
Mm-hmm.
The idea of corridors is ideal. I like that. For instance, the 91. Mm-hmm. If you were to say, okay, how do I get from Twinsburg down to Talmadge,
right,
91? And I was go to a bunch of bikers and say, how would you do it? Mm-hmm. Currently, you would take part of the road or you cut off someplace
right.
else. You could almost lay out a corridor of what it is now and then add to it.
Almost like what the true corridor, you mean like the true travel corridor?
Yeah, but you could use that as a basis to say, okay, when something comes up, you're off the road here because of
right.
nothing.
Right.
Here we can make a difference
yeah.
in that corridor.
Yeah. No, and that's actually, I would love to get to that point, because even now I'm thinking, you know, Hudson's actually adding a bike lane north-south on Stowe Road, which is, you know, it's 2 miles off, but if you were doing the long jaunt, you'd probably rather move over to Stowe and, you know, instead of going through downtown Hudson. I mean, they're never going to have a bike lane down through 91 and 303, probably where the old town is, just, through, you know, they would never
actually,
eat up the green.
Already. There are ways around through that now, because on the...
You threw around like on Veterans Way. Yeah, they have
no,
the bike
lane. If you go underneath the viaduct from 90 from 303,
mm-hmm.
you can hit what is already a bike lane just past Veterans Way, south of Veterans Way.
South, yeah.
And you can
yeah.
almost down to Terex Road.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. You can.
Straight through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody that's not a good driver is not going to do that.
I've done 91 up and down. I've done 303 to Warren.
Well, I think what we need to do is take a lot of this and go to any suggestions, draft something up. You can send it in by email. You can fax it in, whatever. I think AMATS would be very receptive to hearing from anybody who's got an interest in expanding the bike network, using the, you know, the way that people can be attracted to use it. This is sort of just getting started, so your comments are going to be important.
I think to that point, yeah, definitely any suggestions now, or if you think of things later, email or call me. But, you know, specifically on, you know, what are we missing corridors here, you know, things. I mean, I think, like, when we, you know, write it up, you know, I think, make to your point, you know, saying... you know, maybe this section of, you know, certain roads won't be good, but, you know, definitely examine, you know, parallel roads when, you know, if it would be make
right.
more sense.
Right, right.
You know, so it's not like the be-all, end-all, it has to be here, but at least to try to give. So I think, you know, are there corridors that are missing, but also, like, if you have other ideas, you know, as far as how to display or show kind of an on-road
I'm a little biased,
network.
But what about helping North Akron with hills in general, because if we want to get people out and using this
mm-hmm.
network that obviously don't use it now, obviously we need more people to use it if it's going to be worthwhile to make,
mm-hmm.
right? Beginning cyclists is what you have to think of. They hate hills. That's all there is to it. You have to
yeah.
make it easy. Switchbacks, things like that. And then the other thing is you have to get them to places they're, you know, they're going. So what most important corridor for at least this right here in this area is going to be 18.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of pose the question, what can we do to have off-road cycling in the 18 corridor? And I know that's, yeah, it's ridiculous
yeah.
and hilarious, and but at the same time, that's probably one of the most
important right, and I think, you know, and that's
city.
Why we want, you know, we've identified, you know, the Market Street corridor as a corridor because we don't think it can just... You know, it doesn't function the way it...
Right.
And it is, like, the real truth of the matter is that wherever there are high ADTs for cars
right.
would also be the same... I mean, that would be the same way that the bike would... You know, you'd want to use the most direct route that you
could. I feel like the ideal would be off-road... Or, I'm sorry, separated bike lanes
mm-hmm.
where it's on the road, but there's just
mm-hmm.
the separation.
Yeah.
And so people will definitely argue, oh, well, that kind of takes away from the whole point, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you can bike on the road. But
yeah.
at the same time, if you want to get people who don't bike now out and biking,
yeah,
they would feel the most comfortable.
That's
yeah.
they have
and
a
you can kind of
day, and they have
mm-hmm.
actually like Boulevard Island,
mm-hmm.
but it's wide for cars narrowly. But
yeah.
I think that's a lot of money for nothing. But that's me. But I mean.
Uh-huh.
Summit County Port Authority, I saw this before. There's still quite a bit of former Erie Railroad that is not developed at
mm-hmm.
all. It's just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are.
committee that was going.
Well, I think it's going to come down to that good old dollar. No matter what good ideas may be out there, it's going to come down to how much can we afford, how much can we prioritize to the different modes of transportation. So just, you know, keep that in mind. I mean, all these ideas are good. Certainly they help the environment. They help people keep in good physical condition. These are all very noble goals, but we do have an area which is challenged economically. And as we just heard earlier in the meeting, an important artery now is being postponed because of funding. So all I can say is just keep it in perspective. Don't give up. But we're going to have to decide as Summit County, Portage County residents in the AMATS scope of things, what we want AMATS to do. First, second, third, fourth, etc. So just keep it in mind, because I think the dollar is going to be the final judge of what happens and what doesn't happen.
Well, you know, the only thing I can add, and we can move over to the off-road, is though that the good news is that there are a lot of roads where the right-of-way already exists, and it really is down to a bucket of paint. And I think that, you know, and in that case, that I think there are a lot of places where they're, you know, and by identifying some of these corridors, we're hoping that some of those will come to light as, you know, well, hey, we actually have 125 feet of right-of-way. You know, how do we use it? And, you know, there's a lot of evidence right now that's pointing people towards, instead of doing 12-foot road lanes, to do 11-foot lanes because it's actually safer. The wider the lane, we're finding that cars are actually speeding too fast and we're having more safety issues.
What I'm getting at, Curtis, is do you, if you have X number of dollars to spend, do you patch potholes on bike paths or do you patch potholes on
road? Oh, no, I understand that. Yeah. My point is that I don't think it has to be that zero-sum game.
Yeah, I don't think it has to be one or the other.
No. I think you're going to find that you're going to have to keep beating the message home to make some of these things become reality, is all I'm saying. You know, attendance at meetings like this helps. Letters to the editors of the papers, keeping the message going. Otherwise, there are people, you know, you hear the politicians night after night on the news, they're talking jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, I'm sorry, but movement of freight, passengers, and people are what bring them to their jobs and from their jobs. So these are things you're going to have to fight for the priority that you need to get this done. That's about all there is to it.
My perspective is it's not so much spending money on infrastructure as spending money or actually campaigning for awareness that everybody has a right to use the road. Everybody.
A lot of your bike paths aren't on roads, though. Is what
well, I'm that's saying. Because they were spent. That's recreational. I'm not interested in the bike path. They can go back to trees, as far as I'm concerned. But I don't use it.
That's got to be part of the message then, too, because I'm not a biker myself. And when I hear biking, I'm thinking, well, we're spending a lot of money so somebody can go out and hear the birds chirp and enjoy the sunshine and things like that.
I don't own a car. I do our free. I either walk, bike, or take the bus.
If people are getting to work on bikes, are greasing the commercial flow with bicycling, that is a different topic, I think, than pure recreational biking.
If you're
making that distinction, then I think that message has to be made clear to a whole lot of taxpayers like myself who may see biking as biking.
Now, like, for instance, that place I went to, Tempe, that bike station, that's tied in with the the transit system. They got light rail coming in there, bus coming there, bikes. They pay $144 a year to use the transit center. They have three showers. They have 40 lockers. They have a complete bike repair facility. They got a staff of two to take care of you. You can go in, rent a bike, buy a bike, sell a bike. come in with your key card 24 hours, well, 23 hours a day, pick up your bike, leave your bike, and in fact, use the stand to fix your bike.
Well, see, I think a lot of people are not aware of how far that can go, that concept.
I think especially AMAX, one thing that, you know, we've traditionally looked at trails, and I think maybe it's, you know, relatively small steps, but I think, you know, as we at least somewhat have the ear of, you know, a lot of the politicians, engineers, planners in the two counties. So, you know, I think we're trying to push, you know, on-road cycling as a viable transportation choice and, you know, actively looking at ways that we can plan and fund to make that, you know, more easy, more safe, more accessible. So the last thing, and I know, you know, for some this isn't as important, but the off-road recommendations, we essentially talked to both the park districts and, you know, this was sort of their big next steps that they would like to see. So building off of the existing regional trails, the colored ones are all the, you know, what they would like to see next. And, you know, so just creating a recreational, which, you know, a lot of these, if built, you know, as the towpath is now for some, can be used also in combination with the on-road. So I mean, this is sort of, you know, the future trail network plan.
So that was a recommendation of, like, the park services, basically?
Mm-hmm. Like, we talked with Metro Parks and Portage Park District, and, you know, they pretty much took the map of what they have now and said, these are the next, you know, three or four trails that, you know, we're going to actively pursue. You know, we're buying, I think varying degrees. But, you know, I think, like, the Metro Parks, like the one in Wadsworth-Barberton, like, they own land a good chunk already along there. You know, so ones that are maybe a little pie in the sky, but also that are actively being pursued.
I have to say, I think that the priority for where both on-road and off-road recommendations are made should be
point
A to point B first, transportation-related first over recreation. Mm-hmm. Mostly because, I mean, you can recreate on a trail that is meant for transportation.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really get where you're going on a trail that's meant for recreation. The towpath's a perfect example. It's beautiful to ride, but for most people, it really doesn't take you anywhere at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's simply a matter of recreation, and that's it.
Connectivity.
I see a T-shirt, transportation over recreation building. But no, I mean, I think that's a good point, because that's something we haven't gotten into too much, is what's the priority in funding?
People want to recreate. You can do that. It's just a matter of...
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point, one we haven't really brought up. Mr. Holmes?
I think it's more critical that we actually set an achievable goal. Let's say in 20 years, we want half the transportation of going to work to be on bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
That will reduce the maintenance of the roads. We still have the roads there to provide the tax incentive.
Mm-hmm.
Metro Park has its own income.
Right.
They have this pilot. I know the environmentalists has gotten this far.
Transportation.
But at the same time, we're looking at only a limited amount of money for the upkeep of our roads, and it's going to be a lot cheaper to reduce, just like electricity. It's easier to reduce electricity than to build more power plants. We need to do the same thing here. If we actually state the goal to our planners, 20 years, we want half the people to be able to get to their job on a bike.
Well, Mr. Helms, I would say in a few minutes we'll be talking about a project which segues right into what you're talking about, so bear with us here for a moment. And we'll be touching upon that very thing you're talking about.
But I think, and one thing I think you missed, we started looking at ourselves compared to other cities to see how many bike miles of paths and lanes we have. You know, to start like making those benchmarks so we can see, like, you know, we have 2 miles of bike lanes in Akron now. You know, maybe we won't get 50% soon, but, you know, saying we want to add at least 10 in the next year. You know, so I think we can start to keep track of our progress. And we're looking for other benchmark things, but, you know, the counting and the how you categorize that, you know, is still very inconsistent.
I'd like to just throw in a little bit different comment about the transportation and the use of paths on the roads. I think if you look at our paths right now, there are a number of them that actually can be used for transportation to work.
Mm-hmm.
The towpath is an excellent example because from anywhere from, Memorial Parkway on down, you can use that to get into downtown Akron. Similar from the south side, you can get all the way along any number of areas within the downtown using a bike. Same with the bike and hike trail. You can get out to Stowe from down in the Cuyahoga Falls or from that way using mm-hmm. some of the bike and hike trails. So I think if we want to have the goal, I think of half the transportation by bicycle, makes a lot of sense. Because you got to make sure you can do it both on bike paths, existing mm-hmm. ones, and new ones, and you can do it with what you can do on the road.
Again, it comes down to connectivity.
Right, yeah, right, exactly.
It's like, don't give up the bike pass. Great. Say you can't do it on
no, the road. No, I want the bike pass, but we want to connect communities, basically.
Right,
that's right. And I think part of what your pioneer is showing is that that's what you're going to be doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take roads where it's dangerous to bike on that would be necessary to get people to work, per se, and take them on the road.
Okay, well, pay particular attention to this last slide because it's got the contact information that I think you should all be aware of and make good use of because all these ideas count. And I said before, you've got to beat the message continuously home to I think, achieve a lot of these goals. So please keep it in mind. And if nobody has any further comments, we'll start to wrap this up and move on to the next topic.
One more thing. Our general plan is we have a subcommittee for our long-range plan that we'll be discussing this with. Right now, we just have what's in your packet up on our website. I'm hoping in like a week or two we'll have a full draft. May not be overly pretty, but for lots of comment. And then we also have, and I think make sure your email's on that list. I think we have most people. That's probably will be the main way we communicate. Of check this out. It's available. If you have comments that way,
we're also tweeting.
We're also on Twitter now, if you're so inclined. I think the goal is in March we'll have a bike plan that we can move forward with. Please look over what you have now, and we'll be emailing out when we have a little more. Any ideas on anything that you've seen or anything that other ideas that should go into a plan? I think the cool thing with the website is the plan, once it's printed, it's sort of static. But with the website, we can continue any ideas. We can update immediately. So. Thank you, and that's my contact information. And that's also on just the AMATS website under staff directory if you can't find it.
Okay, thank you, Krista. We'll now move to item 5 on the agenda, selected policy committee agenda items. First and foremost, we've got the new transportation improvement program projects, and Curtis is going to give us some further information on that.
Yeah, every 2 years we do a round of funding for our STP, CMAC, and transportation enhancement programs. Service transportation, basically those are three funding categories. Service transportation funds are usually spent to maintain and preserve our existing infrastructure, as well as potentially develop some new projects, mostly highway-type projects. CMAC stands for Congestion Mitigation Air Quality, which means the projects funded under that program have to have some sort of benefit to air quality. Those usually include operational improvements where we help reduce congestion by creating turn lanes, kind of stop, getting rid of the bottleneck type experience. And then the enhancement program is almost completely used to fund either recreational trails, sidewalks, bike lanes, etc.
And keep in mind, those can definitely connect the communities as well.
Yes, yeah. So, basically what we have are we have three resolutions, and they were all brought together to sort of our whole funding package, but each resolution covers one of the programs. So the first one is the Transportation Enhancement Program. Transportation Enhancement Program, roughly, had a total of almost $3 million. These projects will go in on the 2016 and 2017 calendar year mostly for funding. That's usually because there's a PE, preliminary engineering phase, a right-of-way phase, and then a construction phase. None of the projects that we fund happen in a day's time, obviously, which is sometimes a frustration. But what you can see is of the main things that we kind of prioritized to fund, and this is, I'm going to make sure it says it right, table 1 in your packet. we're funding part of the Portage Hike and Bike. One of the trails actually that's on this map, too, that's right now shown in a color, the Confluence, received funding. We're going to help fund that. So that Confluence Trail is actually going to be built. Liberty Trail up in Twinsburg, which isn't on that map, which is going to connect part of the Liberty Park, which is actually a really pretty area. Then the Headwaters Trail, there's an extension, which we also show on that map. It's going to receive funding. We've got sidewalks in Ravenna, sidewalks in Hiram. Manaway is going to get some money for new sidewalks. In Richfield, they're actually going to widen the road, the Broadview Road bridge that goes over I-271 to, in the future, potentially accompany bike lanes. So it's, you know, at this point, it's one of those things where it's all about timing. ODOT's replacing the bridge, and the village is saying, well, if you're going to replace it, let's make it wide enough so that in the future we can potentially put bike lanes on it. So, you know, it's kind of funny because it's that catch-22. Like, if you don't do it, people say, you know, those idiots didn't have the foresight to build the bridge wider. And if you do it, somebody says you're wasting taxpayer dollars because there's not going to be a bike lane there. So that's kind of one of those interesting projects, but it does have support in the village. And I think there's a lot of excitement. And also, this project came out of one of our planning grant program, where we did a plan of for the village of Richfield, looking at transportation and land use. And this recommendation that's getting funded came directly out of those planning dollars. So for us, it was kind of nice. We invested some planning dollars, and we actually have a project that's coming to fruition already from that investment. The second memo, which is the, I believe that is the STP and CMAC programs. So that's actually a combination. Are listed, if you turn... apologize if these aren't numbered. If you turn the page from that table one, the next page has a listing of those projects and the costs. So you can see with the STP, some of the notable projects, I won't go through all of them. If anyone's familiar with the flooding that happens in 303 in Streetsboro consistently, this project's actually going to replace the culvert that's about working at 30% capacity because it's actually been crushed. And so that's hoping to alleviate some of the flooding there. It's not a permanent fix, but we're actually pretty excited that project's moving forward with help from ODOT and the city. We also have infrastructure improvements. The only major widening that's happening is in green on 241. That's a $1.6 million project. The other interesting thing to note here is that our cap for projects is $6 million, and no projects that were even applied for came close to the cap. Like, a lot of the projects are smaller scale and not as large as they have been in the past, which is positive. We've been able to get more projects out there through the communities. For CMAC, we also have bus purchases. Those will be taking place rather quickly. For Metro, PARTA is going to be getting a CNG fueling station, so PARTA is going to start running compressed natural gas buses, which I think they're really excited about and hope to see cost savings. And then in those, we see things like signal improvements. They're going to do some on Market Street through downtown Akron, right through here. And also, it's probably about the most notable. So those are the CNAC and SCP projects. And then the final is the resurfacing program, which is actually uses STP. And what the committee decided was to add a new group of SCP, and this is table two, which I think you have to thumb through a few more pages. And basically, that's still STP. Where is this one? There it is. Go to the resolution, and it actually has a list of the approved resurfacing projects. So there's one in Ravenna, in Kent, in Green, New Franklin, Summit County, and then in Hudson Stowe, Norton Road. So, and those are basic resurfacing projects where basically they're really just coming in and repaving over it to give it a smoother finish and fix it. And all these projects got funded basically because we use what's called pavement condition ratings. And when they apply, basically, if you have the lowest pavement condition rating, you get funded. So the idea is that the worst roads in our two counties are getting funded with resurfacing funds. So those are the main projects. Again, I kind of apologize that this memo is a little bit, I'm having a hard time following it myself. But what you'll see is there's a couple of foldouts, and the last foldout that's a table is basically, and this is table six. It's just a nightmare. Basically shows where we are funding, how far out. We're funding through 2017, and it has a list of all the projects in our program. And what you see, going to what we were talking about at the last meeting, we're starting to over-program a lot more to make sure that no funds would ever go back to ODOT instead of going to the region. So what we're doing now is actually in the year 2017, we're carrying a negative balance. But the point of carrying that negative balance is what we've seen, and what the committee saw through analysis was that, you know, about $7 or $8 million a year ends up slipping into the next year. So the idea is that some projects get canceled, some fail, some never kind of get out of that initial engineering stage. So the idea is that we put more projects in the program. Whoever is done and ready first gets the money first, and whoever, you know, if we run out of funds, we'll either borrow from another MPO or that project will be pushed back a year. And what our committee has said is that they're comfortable with that. What they really want to do is make sure that we never give a dime back to the state. So that was sort of the goal of this programming and these two resolutions. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I know there's a lot of projects in here. I think the total ends up being like $58 million of improvements. We've estimated over 4,000 jobs to be created with these funds. So, you know, with that, I'd be happy to answer any, try to answer any questions, and yeah, go from there.
Anybody have any questions or comments, or Mr. Helms?
I think this is, an excellent opportunity in giving the priority to these projects. Obviously, some of them have to be done, but part of the grading process to give them priority is you're resurfacing them. It's a 15 to 20 year period. Well, some roads are down 12 years, but it's a good period of time to also try to phase in our bicycle areas.
Yes.
Just, hey, can we increase the width of this road by 2 feet? Mm-hmm. Like you said, take it from 24 feet down to 22 feet and add an extra 2 feet to get that minimum bicycle road or lane in there. What if we can use that as an incentive? Do they need an evaluation here? Is this road a potential traffic pattern for the traffic? Will it reduce the wear of the road? Give it the road another 2 years between resurfacing if we add 2 feet to the side or to get bicycle use there?
I think
it's the whole grading process, and it's up to the engineers and the education level what they want to
do. And I think what's exciting and that what we're trying to implement right now, we're working on alongside with this, is we are creating a complete street policy, which will, in our next round of funding, so we didn't have it ready for when these projects, you know, were applied for, but next time around when we do the application, we will at least have something that says, you know, how are you considering sidewalks, bicycles, why should we have them here, why shouldn't we have them here, give us a reason, and if you feel like we should, we might be able to help give more money to help, you know, make that happen. And so I think what we're going to try to do is build a complete streets policy that will kind of incentivize the program so that if you're showing that you're going to add that kind of, you know, lane width or sidewalks, that you'll get more points in the process, or, you know, you might be able to go above and beyond the amount or the cap limit that we set or things like that. And we're actually developing that with community engineers and planners right now to find out what are they comfortable with. You know, what do they think is reasonable, and how can we get that implemented? So we're on that path. It's going to take, I think we're hoping that we'll have it out later this fall, or have it be able to be applied to the next fall's round of funding.
I thought you said this was done every 2 years, though.
So the next round of funding is 2013 for this project. So what we're going to do is, we're hopefully going to have the complete streets policy. Then we look at, in 2012, the fall, we'll look at our funding policy and try to insert those into our funding policy. And then when we ask for applications, it'll get applied that way. So it'll be, hopefully we'll apply to the next round of funding in 2 years where we'll actually be able to do that. like these are to the point where they're already been applied for and will be funded, you know, through the old process.
Is that going to be only up to, quote, the management of AMA and the engineers, or are you actually going to bring your policy to us to look at also?
Oh, yeah. Well, everything usually comes through this, so the policy, yeah, the funding policy will be through here. And what we're going to do is how we did the bike plan. I'm hoping in March we'll have a sidewalk. We're calling it a pedestrian plan. And because this kind of got too big, the complete streets policy is going to be tied into part of the sidewalk plan. But it's going to have ramifications on the biking. So that'll come through this committee, too, to discuss that. And then when we do the funding policy, we'll bring that through this committee as well.
I did some reading about complete streets, that it started in California, and then it was something about it being a mandated in Congress. Anything about that, or is that?
No, I mean, it's certainly not mandated in any stretch of the imagination right
There's
now.
There's been several, I think, like different bills that have been proposed, but nothing's gone through. I'm trying to think the last one was.
But I'm glad to hear that. Guys are moving forward with that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I don't think there's any states that have anything. I think majority California of policies are cities. Does California have a...
Yeah. California has actually initiated the whole concept.
Cleveland's instituted it. I know there are some states that have complete street programs. I think Pennsylvania has like a program or where they do promotion stuff, but there's nothing where it's, I think, a mandate. The feds have gotten into the sustainability movement and new urbanism, which is sort of more of the look and feel and aesthetic of communities, and they have mandated for new like HUD developments for the low-income housing that those be built in a new urbanist style so that, you know, you've got the sidewalk, the street, and then, you know, row houses or things like that. So there's elements of it that are creeping in, but nothing like, you know, a full complete streets mandate.
Well, it's good to know that it's at least moving forward.
Well, we have these three resolutions, and if there's no other comments or questions, we'll entertain motions for approval of these as a single motion.
I do.
We have a motion from Mr. Coletta to accept resolutions 2012-01, 02, and 03. Do we have a second? Mr. Baker is the second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approval of resolutions 2012-01, 2012-02, and 2012-03, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We also have two other resolutions for your consideration. Your packets contain attachments 6B and 6C. These are 2012-04 TIP Amendment Number 9. It's an amendment to the fiscal year 2012 to 2015 TIP to add new projects on Cleveland National Road and State Route 18 and to make changes to four existing projects. Attachment 6C in your packets contains Resolution 2012-05, which is TIP Amendment 10. Which is an amendment to the fiscal year 2012 to 2015 TIP to add $37,500 so that PARTA may purchase new bus shelters at locations throughout Portage County. The AMAT staff recommends approval of these. And again, if there's any discussion or questions, we'll go ahead.
And Mike, if I can just add, the 6B is a state of Ohio project. It's an ODOT project. So when they use federal funds for a project, it still has to be on our program. So it's really not our money. It's just that it's sort of these two are both. And the same with the PARTA one. It's their money. These are more like, I guess, like you'd say, almost like administrative resolutions where we make sure our books match the state's books.
If anybody has any questions or comments, do we have a motion for the acceptance or consideration of these two resolutions? Mr. Kish made some motion to accept the two resolutions under consideration. We have a second. Mr. Coletta is the second. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting resolutions 2012-04, 2012-05 as submitted, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. The last item on the formal agenda for tonight that I can determine is attachment 5C in your packets. And I think when I made a comment to Mr. Helms earlier, this is what I was talking about. It is the appointment of 2035 Plan Update Subcommittee, and attachment 5C contains some details on that, including names of proposed members and recommended for the Plan Update Subcommittee. Represents a broad scope of entities within the AMATS jurisdiction. It also has a sentence here that I wanted to raise a little question about. It says, any member of TAC or policy committee is welcome to participate in these meetings. I guess the word participate, does that mean these will be open meetings? Does that mean if somebody on this list drops out that they're welcome to fill the spot?
Yeah, the intent was that what we wanted to do was try to put a list together that kind of spanned the whole region, you know, spanned North, South, Summit, and parts of Portage. But what we wanted to let every member know is that this isn't like an exclusive group, so we wanted any members of policy or TAC to know that if they wanted to be a part of this, to these meetings, that just to let us know, and we'd happily put them on the list. So it will, Brian Smith of PARTA is going to chair it, but other than that, it's a fairly informal committee of planners and engineers that will take time to review the process. And what will happen is that, you know, like in February, what we just showed you here, we're going to take to the plan update subcommittee in February, and we'll get their revisions, and then we'll come back to TAC, CIC, and policy in March and say, you know, we heard from CIC in February, we heard from TAC in February, we heard from policy in February, and we'll go from there. You know, and these are this is how we're going to do the final approval. So the idea is they are open meetings too. Like, members of the public could come and sit in, but couldn't, you know, could not participate in the actual meeting, but they would be open to the public.
So. Now, if one of the 15 on this list for some reason or another cannot participate, do you have to be an office holder, administrator, some professional, licensed professional, and like an engineer or
We would want them to be employed by one of the member communities.
Okay.
So one of the dues-paying member communities.
Okay. Well, now how? When you say people can attend the meetings, how will the meeting dates and times be disseminated? For
we'll probably post them on our website, but we don't do any sort of like official mail out. Like, there's no mail out like there is for this.
Is this a 2-year process?
About 18 months.
18 months.
Yeah. So the plan itself, and really, like, what we really need them in is for the next 8 months as we develop all the products, and the staff kind of gets to work writing the plan, and then we call, you know, and that's when we'll bring a draft plan to CIC, bring it to the plan update subcommittee, bring it to the policy committee to start getting feedback to finalize the plan. So most of 2013 will be spent staff writing, you know, really writing the text of the plan. So the heavy lifting kind of happens between now and the end of 2012.
Okay. All right, anybody else have any questions on that particular item? That concludes our formal agenda. This is traditionally the time of the meeting when we open the floor to other business. Any comments, questions, input? Mr. Coletta.
Southbound on the All-America Bridge, you put in that little short bike lane.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's always been a headache.
Okay.
Have you used it? Has it been?
I've used it, but I'm saying it was always a problem wanting to go straight and then getting crowded. So now there's that little area. I mean, I'm not that crazy about bike lanes, but that one place I like.
Okay. Anybody else have anything? All right. We'll certainly entertain a motion to adjourn if everybody is agreed that we've completed our work here tonight. We have a motion for an adjournment.
I'll make
it. Mr. Kish?
I'll second it.
Mr. Lassen is the second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of adjournment at this time, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries and we are adjourned. Thank you so much for coming out on a challenging night. Our next meeting is going to be, again, here at the Richard Howe House on Thursday, March the 15th, the Ides of March, 7 p.m. So please continue to attend. If you're interested in being a member of the CIC, it takes participation in two consecutive meetings, I think it is, and you can be on the membership roster. So thanks so much for your input tonight, your participation in our meeting.
And we will be here for the rest of the year for the next five or six meetings. So, there's been great hospitality here, and everybody seemed to like the last meeting, so we decided that this was a good location, but we're always open next year if anybody has any good ideas to move it around. So.
I live here in Lucas. I got it.